Coming up on the Sports Weekender, we speak rugby with AJ Whitten. We get the South African view on the All Blacks first match against the Stormers from Brendan. Now we have NRL and Auckland Rugby League with Joey Green. The week that was and the weekend ahead with One News, Zion Dale. Football with Seamus Martin. We preview the NBL basketball with Casey Frank, and our panel is the Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield, and the man, the legend, Mark Watson. Listen in. It's the Sports Weekender. Welcome everyone into the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM, and while it's been a cold old week, it's been, I would have to say, probably in all my years living in Auckland, this would have to be one of the most bitterly cold winters that I've ever seen. But no worries, I'm in the comfort of the studio, and I hope you're all at home having a cup of coffee, and I hope you really enjoyed the show today. Before we go any further, big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West, opposite the iconic Civic Theatre. They have a selection of local craft and international craft beers on tap. They have a selection of bottle beers. They have fine wines, good spirits, great food and music Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09-377-3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Wow. We might as well kick it off. Bit of rugby. The great rivalry tour has begun, and of course here to join us, as he joins us most Saturdays when he's not donating down in the South Island, being looked after, AJ Whitten, former All Black. Good morning.
Good morning, Peggy. Yes, and have been certainly well looked after down south. And you mentioned the bitter cold, but I don't know how that can affect you, because you do have an extra couple of layers of protection. And we're not talking clothes here, my friend.
Oh, God. It's not even 30 seconds and the digs are coming in. I must admit, when I did ask some of my spies, did they see a certain former All Black staggering about on Saturday night, but there was reports, and I did hear a report from someone who did see
it. We were tucked in bed nice and early. It was cold, too cold to be outside down south, that's for sure. But one thing I will say, that stadium, it's an absolute ripper, and great to view rugby, and well done to the people of Christchurch. I've got a great marquee there in that stadium. It's an absolute winner.
Yeah, I know some people that did, and they did get back to me during the week. They actually said AJ was there, well behind, and they actually said you're a good bloke, which I had to question whether they had been partaking in drink rather early in the morning when they rang me up on that. But anyway, AJ, let's get on to it. All Blacks 38, the Stormers 21. I have to say, the All Blacks won a mixed performance. I felt it was a mixed performance, but some good performances came out of it. Peter Lacko was superb. Great to see big Fabian Holland. I thought he was excellent. I felt, from not having hardly any rugby, he hasn't really missed a step. And I have to say the other, Anton Segner gets in. At backs, I felt Billy Proctor probably played his best match. And I hate saying this, but reality is, I really feel that this tour is going to be Bowden Barrett's swan song from the All Blacks. Today's performance really was below par for Bowden Barrett. But anyway, your thoughts?
Well, it was an interesting match. I actually did work it up for the majority of the second half, believe it or not. And surprise at 14 all, a couple of two or three yellow cards. So discipline is something they'll certainly look at. Because you've got to realise you're playing with referees, which is great. They're neutral, but they're from the UK and the URC competition. And guess who plays in that competition? South African franchises. So they're used to the interpretations there of the refs. Still have a big issue with TMOs butting in, but that's just my own beef. That's not going away. But, discipline. You mentioned a couple of players. I think Fabian definitely came in, coming through after his injury early in the year. And we need Big Ben, Piggy, and we don't, and we need this guy. He is certainly a big tank on the field. I thought Patrick, in tandem with him, went well. He led with his captaincy, a couple of big barging runs. And Larkai, I think, is someone who's just going to get better and better in that black jersey. And I've been impressed with him in Super Rugby, and he's continued that form. Few issues to do with their scrum under pressure. We knew that was going to come from the South Africans. They kept it pretty aerial. Didn't quite see why they persisted when they're down to 13 men, the All Blacks. Could have chanced their arm. But look, entertaining. 8,000 crowd there supporting it. You get the win under your belt. You take that. You run to the next one. The All Blacks just arrived. Get settled. And just a congratulations to a couple of the debutants who came on. I thought they added a lot of energy, and they came away with that victory in the last 15 or so minutes. And maybe a bit flattering, but certainly you take that win, one up, and another six or seven to go.
And, of course, then Wednesday we go on to take on the Sharks. And, of course, the Sharks have done a lot of their youth recruitment policies working well. We have a 44-year-old Maha Nonu on the bench for the Sharks. Now, that has, can I be straight to the point? If, you know, and being the great All Black, which you were, at 44... If you were asked to, if there was a young fella and you were playing the Springboks, but there was a young fella, 21, who would you give that to? I know, AJ, you step aside and give the young guy a go because you've done your bit.
Oh, well, I tell you what, the first thing, I wouldn't be playing rugby at 44, and I didn't. I finished at 39, but it was certainly only at a club level, and I wouldn't be playing anywhere near international. I wouldn't be good enough, fit enough, and mentally in tune. So, well, whatever he's doing, congratulations to him. He just seems to be one of those nomadic rugby players that can go anywhere and still apply his trade. He must still be in pretty good nick. Good luck to him. I assure you, once they take the field, he'll just be seen as another player that needs to be dealt to in a way that they come off the paddock and saying, well, that's why you're 44 and not 24. And I certainly think they've got to make their mark in this mark in the Sharks.
Oh, yeah.
Step up and just say that the All Blacks have arrived. This is our other team, we're just going to go out there and play our game and hopefully pile up points on the scoreboard.
Absolutely, AJ. Wow. Well, let's get to an NPC, and of course, Thursday night, a huge crowd. I'm sorry, sarcastic of me, but a small crowd at North Harbour Stadium. But North Harbour really played well against Tasman. But this win, 59-19 over Counties Manukau, that's really huge for North Harbour. Because believe me, I thought at the beginning of this competition, they're going to be towards the bottom of the table. I generally think they've actually got a good set up in that team.
Well, you can't begrudge. They just lost to Tasman. Some could say they should have had the points there, so they would have felt sorry about that, getting back home, and certainly turned on the afterburners. Look, most impressed. Okay, the crowd there wasn't great, but it was certainly great watching on the TV, entertaining. A couple of classic wingers. I like their back three, Banks and this guy, Barham Taylor. Oh, they got some wheels, and very impressive. Led well up the front there by their number 8 and skipper Melbourne. I thought he had a big game. Solid front row and Gordon, Cowley and Tungavasi. So, look, they just put it to Counties right from the word go, and they were playing catch-up. Entertaining, but North Harbour, well, here we go. It could be a contender for that top 8 anyway.
Yeah, which would be a turnaround. Well, it starts off 2:05, Western Springs. Auckland Rugby's promotion is going back in time, back to the good old days of brass bands, cheerleaders. And I'm really hoping and I'm looking forward to this match because it's going to be interesting to see how Duplessis Corriffy does at second 5-8, but the question I need to ask you, AJ, now they're going back in time, is there any consideration of bringing back the great AJ Wetton mullet?
No, I don't really have a mullet. I thought you were going to say, is AJ coming back on the field? I could, but the premiums would cripple the union. before injury. So I'm going to be there, of course. Wouldn't miss it. Western Springs.
Yeah.
What a great start to the competition at home. And I've got it, I was out there the other day, Peggy. They've got the little grandstands up there. Kiddies Entertainment area down. They've got a big crowd, possibly 4,000 to 5,000 going. Nice little marquee where I'll be inside, obviously entertaining and being entertained. But look, I think we're just a bit more confident at the start of the season. I was down there last week, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And look, we there was, in the changing shed, I went in afterwards, bitter disappointment because they let that slip. And you don't let the opportunity slip against a side like Canterbury because they don't come off. And just the lack of concentration the last 3 or 4 minutes. And so they were pretty disappointed with that. A lot of commitment, attitude there, was never give up. So that does give us a lot more confidence going into the season. And they can replicate that energy. I am sure that they can get on top of Wellington, and they have to because they're playing at home. They've got Hawke's Bay next week, and every game's a tough one, you know. So
you've
got to get on that winning trail at home here. Looking forward to it. You mentioned Duplessis at the second 5-8. Surely he's a tough character. There must be an opportunity to exploit that. And I see that Auckland had a couple of injuries. They lost a couple of wingers, sadly. So they've got Spencer on one wing and Simpson on the other, Norrie at fullback. Hopefully with Perifita running the cutter like he did last week, a settled top forward pack, only one change with Cordoops coming in at lock. Look, it's the writing's there. I think this game's there for the taking for the blue and white, and let's hope they do.
Absolutely, AJ. Then we move on to the next game, Bay of Plenty versus Northland. Now, I'm going to pick this one as an upset. I'm picking Northland to beat Bay of Plenty. I was so impressed, and especially speak about wingers. Well, what about the Northland wingers? They were superb.
Oh, look, you're entertaining. As we always say about Northland, at home up there, they are a beast. Away on the road, let's hope they can keep the momentum going. Look, I'm going to go with Northland too. They're playing at Rotorua. Big open ground there. I think Bay have made about 5 or 6 changes after their slow start. They did claw a few points back against Waikato. They bought it 28-0 last week at halftime. That was all over Rover, and the Mulu bells were ringing. So, no, a lot of changes for Bay of Plenty. They need to step up here, but I just like the way they're attacking there at Northland. Exciting. Forbes on the wing with Weber in tandem. Taha Rerangi at number 9 and Hohepa at 10. So, sorry, that's for Bay of Plenty, but I like Rahana and Nock. That's a steady combination.
That's a good combo.
And I just think with Trainer in the boot there, out at the back, I just think if they get some quality ball, you could be in for another high-scoring game here, Peggy.
I think you will too. I think this will just be a fantastic game. Then we go on to the final game of the Saturday, and it's Hawke's Bay versus Tasman.
Yeah, again, Hawke's Bay out of the blocks against Wellington. They looked exciting, and I thought, here we go. This is top 2 or 4 already, and we know that Hawke's Bay are extremely consistent. You know, Fakatava at 9 and Godfrey, and he's been back from injury, and I thought he played exceptionally well last week. Good to see him back on the field here. You've got Braden Sutherland there. You've got some, you know, consistent performers who play in the old Magpies jerseys, and Flanders, obviously, his last season. He'll be pivotal in that back three with Renton and Mahal. So I just think they'll be too strong at home there against Tasman, who just got over the who they play, North Harbour. So the two Havilis are there at 10 and 12. Hoffman's there at 9. They're a good side there, Peggy. So, but I think away at home and Bay, I just think Hawke's Bay would be too good.
Absolutely, and then we go to the Sunday games. Wow, what a way to start the first Sunday game. Ranfurly Shield Challenge. Otago versus Canterbury. Now, there'll be a small crowd down in the place you visited last weekend. We'll be hoping to bring the Shield back to Christchurch. Otago will want to keep it there. This one's a tough one to call. I really am wishing for one thing about the Ranfurly Shield, AJ. I would love to see a smaller union like a Northland at some point who don't get a challenge or a Manawatu, someone to win that so we can bring life back into the Shield. But I suspect a big house at Forsyth Bar.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, because it's so respected and revered in those promises, and financially it does get the punters out. But down in the deep south, well, you won't convince the Otagans. They want it fair and square, and they'll be holding on to it. They'll have a grip. They'll have a vice on it if they can. But, yeah, at home, look, even though it's Canterbury, I just think Otago, with the passion they've got, and they've got this, obviously, that what a back three with Willie, but Casey playing outstanding footy, big ups in the front row there with Pierce, Bell and Mau. They've really got to set the platform. We know how good Cam Miller is at number 10. So, look, I've got some consistency in the selections, but boy, Canterbury, I see old Nick McNichols in the boot down the back. Pihaki, and we've got McLeod, they've brought out the big ones, Mwanga there again, starting with Chapman. Look, they're on paper, they would be favourites, but at home, against the fired-up Otago side, desperate to hold on to the shield, have a bit of a tenure, keep it there for the locals who love it. They'll be out there in all their blue jerseys and blue and gold, they're cheering on. Look, I think it'll be a cracker in the afternoon on Sunday, and I think Otago just scraping through by 3 or 5 points.
And then we go to the final game, and it's Manawatu versus Southland, and my old mate, old Slim Mackay. And I hope you're doing all okay, Hamish. You know, if you're listening, hope things are good, man. I suspect that Southland could win. I'm picking an upset. I'm going to go for Southland. Sorry, Slim.
Oh, and Mackay, yeah, he'll be turning over in his bed because he won't be up yet because it's too early for him. Look, you've got two teams here that look that could be battling for the season. Whatever happens, one team's going to come out a winner, unless they end up a draw. But I just feel
that probably says that. Yeah. It's the most intelligent thing I've ever said. Who'd you say?
I think they're both teams that are pretty similar on paper there. I mean, we've got Bijou in there at number 9. He's been around a while. Lucey, the number 8, we've always thought as a big man off the boot. But at home, the Bucketheads, I think they've just got a bit on it there. I know there's a wee bit of experience. You've got Big Dun Share for Southland there, locking with Aho. But at home, I just think that they'll got a kick up their bum last week. And you've got to win these matches at home, Piggy. And one of them's going to be at the bottom of the table. And, you don't want to be there this early of the season. So Manawatu to come away with victory at home.
Okay, so what's the plans for the rest of the day? Obviously at Western Springs, and actually I might be down there. I'm going to sneak into that corporate tent you're in, mate. I'm definitely going to sneak into that, mate.
Yeah, well, you come down there, as I said, we'll let you in. The kiddies are for half price, but we'll let you in. But look, it's going to be great. I'm going down. It's my daughter's birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Olivia.
Happy birthday, Olivia.
I won't have a chance to see her, Sammy, but I'll catch up tomorrow. She'll be out with the girls having a great time. So, look, get down there, Piggy. Look, it's going to be the afternoon. It's not as chilly. It's a great setup. And the cheer on my blue and white. And this is a big game. They must come away with the points. So I'll be down there cheering on as loud as I can.
Absolutely, AJ. Well, AJ, you have a wonderful weekend, me old mate.
Yep,
and then we'll definitely catch up next weekend, and really looking forward to this, not only the NPC, but this tour. It's really got me reinvigorated about rugby.
Come on, your son. Take it easy. Look after yourself.
Cheers. Thanks a lot, AJ. That was AJ Wetton. Bloody good. I noticed that I haven't suffered the same humiliation as I always do with AJ. But anyway, just before we get on to our next interview, big shout out to Force Electrical. And if you are looking for any electrical work, these are the people you need to see. Force Electrical. It was started in 2014 by my old mate, Nick Brakovich, and it's grown into a trusted name across the wider Auckland region and Northland as well too. And why you should choose them, first of all, they're reliable and they have knowledge that sets them apart. They will stay ahead of all the latest industries and technology. what they do. Well, what can't they do? They'll do anything from residential and commercial projects, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel system with inverters and battery storage and ELV solutions. So any electrical work you need to contact Force Electrical. The number is 021-628-341, or you can email nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. Well, thanks a lot, Brax, and I really appreciate this. Anyway, let's get to this interview I conducted with Brendan Nell.
Okay, well, can you speak a bit louder? Sorry, man, I'm just...
Yeah, I know. You can hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, cool. Hi, welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. All Blacks 38, Stormers 21. One hell of a good game to start off the two. I think Dave Rennie, while he got the results, possibly some very, very bad discipline, but some fantastic play by the Stormers. Brendan Nell, we're live at DHL Stadium. What's been your views on this first game, Brendan?
Well, it's great to be here with you guys. It's sorry, the crowd noise is a bit bad. It's just the game's just ended, so it was a great opener for the tour. Everything that we hoped for, a game that we certainly, the Stormers certainly gave the All Blacks a game. I think in the end, the fact that the Stormers are only 3 weeks into the preseason, probably counted against them in those last 10 minutes, and the score blew out a bit. It certainly didn't feel like a one-sided game at all, like the scoreline might suggest. Stormers really took it to them and gave them a good go. But yeah, there's been a number of, I think, a good win for the All Blacks. But at the end of the day, there are some questions that Dave Rennie will have to answer. The scrum certainly didn't look that good. There's a bit of discipline. 3 yellow cards is never a good thing.
No, that's not good.
And but they came through in the end. They got the results, and I suppose that's all that matters.
I suppose Dave Rennie will be happy with this result for the All Blacks, but to be quite honest with you, discipline, and you just said it, in that first half I could possibly see up to 10 to 12 penalties against the All Blacks, and the penalties were right, Brendan. They were good calls by referee Dickinson.
Well, yeah, I think you couldn't really argue with any of the yellow cards. And at the end of the day, I mean, the referees look out for that. And maybe that might just be an interpretation thing, not used to Northern Hemisphere referees. I did think the one thing that did come through is that the more experienced players in the team, Rico Ayani, Anton Leonard-Brown, those guys came through pretty well for the All Blacks in the end. And part of that. So the way they started the game, I thought it was going to be a really one-sided game. But the Stormers certainly threw their maul and then threw their scrum, got themselves back in the game. And I was very happy with Yakin Ahmed, the 20-year-old fly.
Very
good. Certainly looks like he belongs at this level, and certainly was brave enough. And Dion Fury, the 40-year-old Stormers captain, was exceptional. He played like a 20-year-old, and it was actually good to see him at this. I don't know how long he can still carry on for, but I suppose if Mark Nonne can still play at 44, he can still play for another couple of years.
That is a huge talking point, as we realise Mark Nonne possibly will be on the bench midweek for the Sharks. But just getting back to it, also felt Andre Venter at hooker, I felt that his go forward was fantastic, but totally agree with you on there. From my perspective, from an All Blacks perspective, Peter Lackey to me was absolutely outstanding, and big Fabian Hollenbeck, I think he made a difference.
Yeah, I think there's certainly individuals that come out. It'd be interesting to see how many of these guys would put their hands up for the test team, because other than the Alliance Tour, where the teams come together and sort of try to figure out who's their best 23.
Yeah, that's it.
It almost feels like the All Blacks have got a very good idea who their 23 is, and so it's going to be difficult for a lot of these guys to get themselves onto that team sheet. But saying that, there is another couple of games, and a lot can happen. We've seen injuries already. The Stormers had a couple tonight, lost both their scrum halves. We're certainly going to see a bunch of stuff happening in the next couple of weeks, and we might have a very different idea by the time we get to the test series.
Absolutely. Just from your point, I think the biggest talking point, what will be the biggest talking point for, say, for
with some of your South African journalist colleagues, what will be the big talking point out of it? Will it be the lack of discipline by the All Blacks, which could be a real area of contention when we get to that first test in Johannesburg? Or will it be that we still want to see more out of this All Black team?
Well, I think we can't judge them on one game, and as I say, I mean, a lot of these guys might not play in that first test. So, I think there's a couple of areas that the Springboks will have taken note of. One is the scrum. I think the props will be licking their lips, and certainly the other franchise props as well. I think that's the one thing. The maul was quite successful with the Stormers. And the high ball, they almost didn't look very comfortable under the high ball. That's a big strength of South Africa's as well. So I think those are the three things. Discipline's one of those things you can't really... I always feel for players when it's a yellow card for a head-high shot, because often the players are falling into a tackle, and I thought the first yellow card tonight was exactly that. I didn't really think it was a yellow, but I suppose when you get through in a game, you can't play with 14 men for 30 minutes. So you've got to look at that. But nowadays, those things are a bit of a lottery as well.
Absolutely. In fact, to be honest with you, Brendan, they were playing close to 15 minutes with 13 men, and you're dead right. There's no way that you can keep this up. A better team would have beaten the All Blacks on the day. I have to say that while I think from our perspectives here in New Zealand, yes, the tour is over and this first game is over and done with, but it means one thing about this tour, Brendan. It is not going to be a sprint. It is definitely going to be a marathon, this tour of player attrition. You could just see it out there. Wow.
Yeah, you could. It is. I mean, you can see some of the hits here sitting here, and I don't know how it came across on the television, but you could audibly hear some of the hits here. It was some huge hits from both sides in this game, and you could see a number of walking wounded after the game as well. I wouldn't be surprised if you lose a number of players on this team. The tests are going to be extremely physical. But just on the positive though, how great was it to have a game like this? 47,000 people packed into the stadium. And it sort of makes you wonder, is the message to world rugby and to the rest of the world, why are we having nameless championships that nobody really cares about when we should be having these work, these tours work, these
brilliant.
That we haven't had in
absolutely
years,
brilliant,
and they work.
I tell you something right now, I'll be honest with you, and I'm certainly showing my age. I definitely didn't remember when the All Blacks toured here in 76, but when I was a teenager, I do remember when the Cavaliers toured here in 86, and trying to get the results or trying to listen to the matches on the radio overnight. This, I can tell you something right now, I've never... been as I've told you in the past, the only time I'm up at this hour in the morning is usually to go to the bathroom. So I must admit, it's been a fantastic opening start to the tour.
Yeah, it has, and it's only going to get better. In Durban, we're hearing that the All Blacks might play their best team in 10 days before the first test. So that's going to be interesting. And as you say, I mean, we might as well address it here. My Nonno being on the bench there. I personally think it's a bad look for the Sharks.
I think so too.
An absolute legend of a player, but he is 44, and I just feel that we spoke this whole week with players here from the Stormers, think us with tears in their eyes how it's a dream to play the All Blacks, and then you go and bring in a guy who hasn't been in Durban 7 days, and you put him on the bench and take somebody else's spot away. I mean, look, I know there's lots of fans who are going to want to see that, and they're going to want to see Marnana do go hockey against the All Blacks. I get that. I get the stand to get the views and maybe get a few more people in the stadium. But I don't think it's a great look for the Sharks. They picked a very young team, and if the All Blacks picked the team, I think that's probably going to be the toughest game for a provincial side in South Africa, because they've got a lot of youngsters in that team, and that's a very experienced All Black team they'll be playing.
Absolutely, and I think what it does, it gives that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity these tours do. Brendan, I know that you are rushing to get to the press conference, so I'm going to leave you here. Thank you so much for your time, and hopefully this will be a lot more easier and relaxed next week because we're back to normal Saturday games.
Yeah, I must admit, I enjoy Saturday games better than Friday night games. But yeah, it's great that two's kicked off. Now it's a roller coaster to the tests, and I can't wait.
Absolutely, Brendan. All the best, and we will be I'll message you during the week. Have a great rest of your Friday night over here as we get ready for Saturday here. Cheers, thanks.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
And that was...
Yeah, cheers, Brendan. I'll let you get to the conference. Bye.
And that was... sorry, guys. Sorry about that. And that was Brendan Dale. So next up, we're going to talk a bit of NRL with a big win by the Warriors last night and a bit of Auckland Rugby League as we head into playoffs, not only in the Fox Memorial and also in the Steel Shanks Women's Premiership. So let's play a bit of music and hopefully we don't fall foul of Spotify. So if you're listening to Spotify, be kind and we'll just play a bit of music. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. And just before we get on, just before we speak to Joey Green, this segment's brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash your car, rinse the boat, clean the base station, keep the wife's tomatoes happy, all with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions. No worries, and different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Sorry, as I try and keep my voice going. Well, what a fantastic victory it was for the Warriors last night, 28-12 over the Panthers. And we've got a big weekend of rugby league coming up and also including playoffs in Auckland Rugby League. Here to join us as he joins us most Saturdays, Joey Green, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. I'll tell you what, you could probably start the segment with one question that most Warriors fans would be asking themselves this morning. Is it really our year?
Oh, please don't go there. Please don't go there. You know, I'm actually going to hide underneath the table in the studio. As soon as somebody says that, I'm going to hide. But I'm going to say this right now, Joey. And Andrew Webster's era, which we now have secured our finals football, 3 years out of four, this guy's been able to do this. This would be one of the finest victories. James Fisher-Harris was so immense last night, but Luke Metcalf made his return and he just looked the absolute goods out there. He's going to have... Andrew Webster's got some hard decisions to make, but the way Metcalf played, God, you'd be very... You're in a good position if you can drop him down in New South Wales Cup.
Yeah, 100%. What a way for Big Cuff to come back into that halfback role and put in an outstanding performance, to be fair. Very composed, like most pundits have said over the last few months since Kamaiti Martin's been in that seven jersey. The kicking game or the extra piece of kicking game that Luke Metcalf brings compared to Kamaiti Martin was really on show last night. James Fisher-Harris, Mitch Barnett and Aaron Clark up front really set the tone for what was a strong start, and it's what we've seen over the last couple of weeks since the Bulldogs lost a few weeks ago where they really missed the start. The Bulldogs got the better of them in that first 20 minutes and made it tough for them to come back. The Warriors have really won that first 20 minute periods very, very well in back-to-back weeks, which is a very good sign heading into September and hopefully October football for the New Zealand Warriors. On the other hand, so that I think another couple of players who have really stood up over the last month or so, Tennisdale Smith, Eddie Aramea Toyaba, two young forwards as well off the bench, nine weeks out of 10. And, you know, they're really starting to make the most of regular, consistent first-grade football. I think Tennisdale Smith will probably be the biggest beneficiary of Mitch Barnett, rather leaving the club at the end of the season. He looks similar, you know, to James Fisher-Harris. He won't give you, you know, 250 run metres, but he'll give you effort for however many minutes he's on the field. And I think it's going to be guys like that. Hopefully by the time final football comes around, we see Jackson Ford come back into the mix. And, you know, some very good selection issues for Andrew Webster to have heading into the right season or right part of the season. But Penrith, look, they just, you know, on the flip side to the Warriors getting the start, the Panthers missed the start. I thought, you know, they could have really come over here and ambushed the Warriors after, you know, a high-flying couple of weeks. Obviously, losing Isaiah Yeo, you know, towards the back end of the first half won't help them getting into September. And Nathan Cleary nearly stole the show at the back end of the game, but they just missed the jump. And, you know, won't be going home too happy, will be Ivan Cleary.
He won't be happy at all. He will be so hacked off on the start, the lack of start, and the bad start that they made. And I have to say, but you never count out Penrith. They're always there or thereabouts. But the main thing is tonight, last night we secured playoff football, which is, you know, which would, and many years ago would be seen as a novelty for Warriors fans. It is now an expectation.
Yeah, 100%. You look at, like you're saying at the top of the show, Andrew Webster, since he's come into the Warriors role, you know, out of the, you know, the four seasons he met him, we've played four of those seasons. Yes, last year was probably a bit of a downside compared to the other finals appearances. But now the expectation of the Warriors is that they're a top eight side year in, year out. And I think as long as Andrew Webster's at the club, they're going to be a club to watch for years to come.
Anyway, we move on to Thursday's game. Well, you get an 80-point hiding, your season's probably over, but not the, somebody forgot to say, tell Scott Drinkwater about that and James Tamalolo, because they absolutely spanked the Titans. Cowboys 30, Titans 8.
Yeah, look, like you said, any side that gets 50 put on them, let alone 82 last week, you're going to need a bounce back, and bounce back massively they did, which was probably what we should have expected from the Cowboys. They're just inside that top eight, the boys from North Queensland. And when you have, you know, the guys like you've mentioned, Scott Drinkwater, Jason Taumalolo, you've still got Tom Dearden waiting in the wings, albeit a bit injured, you know, wanting to come back into the side, but they've still got a very, very talented side. Does North Queensland. And I think for Josh Hannay and the Gold Coast lads, like we mentioned, you know, 6 to 8 weeks ago, for this Gold Coast side, it's just about building in towards 2027 and beyond. Now that they've found the guys that they want to build this club around, you know, the Zane Harrisons, the Jaden Campbells, Keanu Kenny in their spine, Ollie Pascoe at hooker. For these guys, it's just going to be about getting the reps together to, you know, hopefully fire in 2027. But for Todd Payton and, you know, and the Cowboys, they're going to want to hold on to, you know, their spot inside the top eight, because as we'll touch on in just a little bit with the next matchup we saw on Friday night, you know, there's a few sides chipping at the bits to get into final football.
Yeah, well, we go to that next match. Wow, what a fantastic match. Roosters 20, Bulldogs 18. Well, the Walker, The Sam Walker, Daly Cherry Evans, halves combination is really coming into fruition for them right now. That's really beginning to work well. But Bulldogs, they would be kicking themselves because they had a chance to really put the sword to the Roosters. Stephen Crichton at standoff, I think, is playing his best football I've seen him play in a very long time.
Yeah, so do I. And listening to another podcast talking about Stephen Crichton the other week, like, whilst he's not, he's similar to Lachlan Galvin, he's not a traditional half. What he probably is that that Bulldog side needs is a very, very good communicator, and it shows in the way that he leads that left edge. There you got himself, Viliami Kekau, playing some very good football at the moment. Matt Burton with a simplified role at centre. You can tell they just seem to be clicking in the gear, and like I mentioned with the Cowboys win, the Bulldogs are a side who are itching at the bit to work into their top eight. They showed last night that they're very, very capable of, you know, challenging these sides like the Roosters and the Warriors a few weeks ago, and they'll be a little bit disappointed that they couldn't, you know, ice the game out last night, but the Roosters showing how strong they are heading in towards the right end of the season. Sam Walker, geez, if you're the Roosters, you've got to start thinking about throwing the checkbook at him now and whatever he wants. Give him the keys to Bondi, because he's your halfback for the future.
Absolutely, and a bloody good halfback at that too. Anyway, we move on to the Saturday games. Well, the first one, the Storm versus the Sea Eagles. This becomes important for the Sea Eagles. They need this victory to stay in touching distance to the eight.
Yeah, exactly that. I think with Melbourne, now that the writing's on the wall that they, you know, that 2026 is basically done for them and they can't extend onto their final streak. It's great to see the guys like Hayden Watson getting his second start at halfback, you know, for the Melbourne club, and starting to get a lot of these younger guys who are part of the Melbourne Storm jersey flag side last year that won the premiership. You know, like the likes of Hayden Watson, Angus Hinchy off the bench. You know, starting to bring through this next proper Storm, hopefully superstars that we'll see over the next 3 to 5 years. And Manly, another side who, you know, very much, you know, trying to just chip away towards hopefully securing a finals football berth. They're going to need a big win, and it's never been easy for any side, let alone Manly, to go down to Amy Park and come away with the 2 points. That back line is still one to be wary of. Lingo Hopewadi, Tolu Kola, Ruben Garrick, Jason Saab, there's still plenty X factor in that side. So a game that, you know, as much as there's not much in it for Melbourne, they could still upset a few seasons, and I think they might do the job.
Absolutely. So then we can move on. And this game, I am looking forward to it. The Brisbane Derby, the Dolphins versus the Broncos. I think, you know, after last night, I really look forward to this one. While the Dolphins have been high flying, I'm back in the Bronx because I think they still fancy themselves to make the eight.
Oh, yeah, and as much as, you know, Brisbane are sitting in 15th, when you look at a side who, you know, still has Payne Haas, Ezra Mann, Patrick Carrigan, Maurice Walsh, they've still got X Factor all over the park. Tony Staggs is still in there. You know, they've still got a very, very good football side, and the Dolphins have kind of fallen away a little bit over the last 5 or 6 weeks. They're not playing as good as what they were post Anzac Day game against the Warriors in that kind of 8 to 10 week spell where they were one of the hot teams in the competition. You know, they have kind of fallen away, and I think the Broncos, like very much like yourself, I think they'll be wanting to, you know, they'll just be wanting to upset a few teams, and I think they do have a very good chance of doing it this afternoon. But you know, when you look at the X factor of the Hammer at fullback, Herbie Farnworth out in the centres. They've still got a very tough back line to stop as well. So it's going to be a great battle of Brisbane, and it could go either way.
Then we move on to the final games. Well, this one, I think, is one of the more easy games to pick. I think the Rabbitohs will absolutely give it to the Eels.
Yeah, and especially with how the Rabbitohs fell away against Cronulla last weekend. Parramatta was a very, very poor way to win. Yes, they got the 2 points, but I think if they put out a performance like they did last week against the Rabbitohs side, who with Aston Ward and Cody Walker playing some really, really good football in the Hardswarm side, I think those two alone will be enough to get the job done over a very poor Parramatta side. So South Sydney to win pretty comfortably.
Okay, so we then move on to Sunday games, and of course then we'll get to the NRLW with the Warriors playing the Knights. But we start off Raiders versus Knights. Well, you know, despite losing Dylan Brown, who was a key player for them, the Knights look fairly comfortable, but the Raiders, they still want to have a say in what's going to happen in the top eight.
Yeah, exactly right. Another side in Canberra who just don't want to shy away from finals football. Yes, they're still a shadow of the side that they were last year, but Ethan Sanders, Ethan Strange, Owen Paddy really starting to come into some good form on the footy field. So Newcastle didn't really look like they missed a beat last week up in Brisbane. As much as they've lost Dylan Brown and Dylan Lucas for the season, I don't think they're going to lose that much X factor in the side. Sanders, Smith and Fletcher Sharp are still a very, very handy halves pairing. And I think Newcastle might go down to Canberra and do a similar job.
Absolutely. So then the final one, the Dragons versus the Sharks. Dragons have had two wins all year, but they haven't been that far off. But I just think the Sharks are playing very good football at the moment.
Yeah, look, the Sharks are probably, a few weeks ago, they would have been one of the dark horses in this competition. Now they're really starting to firm themselves. They're a bit of a contender as we head towards the back end of the season. And like we've mentioned over the last month, to be fair, the Dragons are starting to look like a very much improved side. Yes, it would have been nice to see this at the start of the season, but hey, they're definitely building towards 2027, but Cronulla are going to walk away with this one, and I think this one could turn quite ugly for Dragons fans.
Absolutely. Then we go to the NRLW. Warriors, Waheni went down in a very close one to the Titans. They have the Knights tonight at 7:30.
Yeah, look, a very interesting matchup for the Warriors NRLW side. They've got a very star-studded back line. Obviously, you look at Melihuhanga, Stacey Waka, Tasha Ikanasio, Gail Broughton as well, steering the ship at the moment. They're looking like a very classy back line, but it just kind of looks like their forwards are just starting to fade away in the game a little bit too early and don't quite have the gas to go with some of these other forward packs. And especially this Newcastle side. Newcastle, regardless of whether it's men's or women's football, they're always known to be a club that just toils away and always get through the hard stuff and come out the end after a tough, gritty win. And I think we're going to see a similar game plan from the Knights women's tonight. But I'd like to think that at home, Indigenous round four for the NRLW as well. So I think that the Warriors Waikini might just have a little bit extra to play for and might sneak away with the 2 points tonight.
Anyway, we move on to Auckland Rugby League, and okay, this is the playoff to get into the grand final versus Otahu. It's Manukau versus Mount Albert. Manukau fronted last week, obviously a lot of injuries. This time I believe they've still got injuries, so I'm picking Mount Albert and a repeat of last year's final.
Yeah, I definitely think we might see a repeat of last year's grand final. And like you mentioned, yes, Manukau was still a very much a depleted side, but they welcomed back a few key guys into the side this week. They welcomed back Sam Nasi, Tahi Bagley, and Raven Tongia Fofoa, who are three very key players in this Manukau side. Raven filling in at lock, Tahi a big, massive second rower, and Sam Nasi basically steering the ship for the side from fullback. Taking on Mount Albert, who are very much unchanged from the last month or so. Api Pepoirangi, ex-NRL and Super League player, or also an Irish international as well, by the way. They've got a very classy side. They've still got Porter Doyle in at the hooker role, who has spent some time in reserve grade systems at the Warriors, at the Dragons. They've got a very handy forward pack too. So I think whilst Monaco will be up for the task, I do think we may see a repeat of the 2025 Fox final.
Absolutely. Then we go to the Steel Shanks semi-finals. Otahu versus Richmond, Mangurewa versus Mangere East.
Yeah, look, Otahu taking on Richmond at Burt Hennen Park this afternoon. We have seen Richmond tip over the Otahu Leopards through the season, but I don't think it's going to be happening again this afternoon. This Otahu side just a little bit too strong in both the women's and the men's grade, and imagine if they could take the double next weekend. And Manurewa taking on Mangere East. like we mentioned last week, there were, you know, there was home semi-finals got to play for, and Manurewa just managed to sneak a win last week and get themselves a home semi-final against Mangere East. And whilst Mangere East have a very, very young women's side, I think they might give this Manurewa side a bit of a challenge. But the Marlins women's side starting to peak at the right point of the season, and I think we'll see them charge into the grand final next Sunday.
Okay, Joey, thank you so much. We will catch up again. We'll catch up again next week. I'll have a chat to you next during the week. Cheers, mate. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to be on, mate. We'll chat again soon.
Cheers. Thanks, mate. And that was Joey Green from Joey Green. He used to be with Auckland Rugby League, a rugby league referee, but really knows his code. So next up, we're going to speak to Zion Dale. We haven't spoken to him for a while, so I'll just play some music.
Too fast to prepare for this. Tripping in the world could be dangerous. Everybody circling as vultures. Negative, nepotist. Everybody waiting for the fall of man. Everybody praying for the end of times. Everybody hoping they could be the one. I was born to run, I was born for this.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Just before we go to our next guest, this is a special thanks to Enterprise Recruitment for sponsoring the segment. Finding the right people can be hard, and there is so many unexpected surprises. So cut out those unexpected surprises by contacting Enterprise Recruitment. They will find you the right candidate to suit your business needs. So contact enterprise.co.nz, and just to let you know, they have branches nationwide. Well, it's been a while, and we haven't spoke to him in a long time. Since the last time we spoke, he's been to the World Cup, and even though he's on TV, he became more famous on Celebrity Treasure Island from One New Sports. Zion Dale, good morning to you, and welcome back, brother.
What an intro. Thank you, mate.
You are the giant slayer. You know, the problem is, and I did get some inside jokes from some of your colleagues at One News. They were saying that when you made it big on Celebrity Treasure Island, somebody said, yeah, it's great when you get on TV, you make yourself famous, but when you're already on TV to make yourself famous in a reality.
Of course they did. Yeah. Of course they would throw me under the bus and stitch me up like that. But no, it's been a busy few months on the island, and then off to the World Cup. It's been great. It's been the time of my life, actually, time I'll never forget. But we're back into it, started all over again, and you know, I've come back into a big winter of sports, so it's still all go. But no, it's good to be back with you, mate.
Yeah, it's good to be back, and I know you're in America. I suspect that the wonderful Mel Robinson would have said you got there because that bloke from Planet FM, Eamon Hallisey, said you've got to send him over there. No, you got there.
No, I do appreciate your pitch back in I think, was it January or February, to get me over there, so that definitely...
Yeah, I spoke to Mel, and she probably thought just to get rid of this pest. Hey, Mel, if you're listening, we're going to keep it to script. Anyway, we're going to start it off last week. Well, we get back from last Saturday. Obviously, the Warriors, and before we get to the Warriors' performance last night, they started off last week, really great performance against the Titans.
That was fantastic. I think, it's a game that if these guys were going to show that they're premiership contenders, a game against the Titans, they need to win. And goodness me, last night for 65 minutes, that's the benchmark for me for the Warriors. They showed they can match it with Penrith, albeit, they were missing K Casey McLean, Jack Cogger, Dylan Edwards.
For me,
going into that game, that's one that they needed to win. They needed to show that they can win. And I just thought they were fantastic.
Oh,
just
brilliant.
The middles were absolutely fantastic. Gave a platform for the backs to shine. And look, I think for me, Luke Metcalf going forward, if these guys are going to win a premiership, it has to be him.
I think so,
playing
too.
Starting. I mean, and don't get me wrong, that's nothing on Tamati Martin. I think he's been superb there, but just Luke Metcalf is class. You can see why the Dragons wanted him. You can see why a few other clubs wanted him when he was on the outer at the Warriors. And just the way his poise and just little things like calming the team down, not just the flashy things you see in the tries, but for me, he's got to be there going forward.
Now, just starting last week was the NPC, and I've got to say this right now. Congratulations to TVNZ who are showing the NPC. I have to say one thing. I will say this. I love this competition. I think it was great to see over 20,000 at One New Zealand Stadium, Te Kaha, for the great tradition between Canterbury and Auckland. I think the rugby is always good, and I think it brings out that tribalism, which we all like.
And I promise you, I'm not saying this because I work at TVNZ, but I've said this for a long while. I had a good mate who used to live with me, and we would go down all the time. I love the NPC too. I love everything about it. One thing I think that was clear, especially during COVID, is that the Super Rugby is great. It is dwindling a bit, but the NPC gets the whole country involved, from Southland to Northland. Everyone has someone to support. There's games in the area or there or thereabouts. And I just think the competition's fantastic. And you say Auckland-Canterbury game was great. I love how Auckland are back at Western Springs this afternoon. And you've got a Shield Challenge at 2 o'clock on a Sunday tomorrow. The competition is fantastic. It's a different brand of rugby we're used to seeing, more free-flowing. And yeah, everything about it, I think it's fantastic, and yeah, it gets the whole country involved.
I think it does too. I think it does, and I will say this, is that, you know, if there's one thing I always thought after COVID, if we probably needed to go to Super Rugby. If we didn't, I would have had no problems if their professional game would have been the NPC, because I felt.
And I mean, the best
teams are even. Teams are even too.
And you've got guys that are also playing for spots in the All Blacks as well, in some sense, because there's no other rugby on. You've got guys that are playing all around the country that are also playing, you know, to keep themselves in Dave Rennie's books. In case of injuries, not just for the South African tour, but going forward and for the games against Australia and the Northern Tour too.
Now, we also over the weekend, the Com Games was on fantastic the other by Elijah McCartney and some of our athletes, but the Silver Ferns, they were able to beat Jamaica in the final of the Commonwealth Games. I know they would have preferred to have beaten Australia, because it's a big thing when you beat Australia, but I'm going to say this right now, a great comeback for the Silver Ferns. Even in these times of uncertainty around netball when it comes to our National Professional League.
I have to be perfectly honest with you, when the Com Games coming around, my interest was very low besides the netball. I think, you know, for the Silver Ferns, it's the World Cup, and then the Commonwealth Games are probably their two big tournaments that, you know, that they would want to win, and two big metrics that just show where they are in international netball. And given everything that they've gone through over the past 18 months to go, and look, I mean, whether it was Australia, Jamaica, England, whoever, they walk away with gold. And, you know, I think it just shows the quality of Dame Nolene Toto. To be perfectly honest with you, I've always been a fan of her. I thought the way that everything unfolded. Yes, I know, you know, there's a lot of things that go on in that situation. But when you've got a coach like that who has a proven record and now has a Commonwealth Games gold around her neck, it's hard to look past and think, you know, who else is better at the moment for that role than Dame Nolene Toto. It's a bit of a shame where the game is at in this competition in terms of grassroots and domestic level, which I hope doesn't have a flow-on effect to the Silver Ferns in the coming years. But, I mean, right now, that was, you know, that was some of the best netball that team could play. And for, Dame Nolene Toto to only have, what, a couple of weeks with the team and to produce netball like that, I think it shows the players that are there do respect her. And she's picked players that will fit and buy into her way of playing. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic and great for the Silver Ferns, given what they've been through over the past few months.
I can tell you something right now, and I can tell you, now, I know in some of the insiders in netball at the moment in New Zealand, is not in a good state, but there is more to come, and hopefully in the next coming weeks I will be speaking to a prominent player on that who they will be revealing their plans, whatever happens. Anyway, we move on. Obviously, FIFA, well, guess what? They back down, as they always do. Infantino, you know, like he's big, there is calls for him to be ousted out of FIFA.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the... You could argue it's been a circus for however long. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, I know it's got nothing directly to do with FIFA, but the breakaway football league, there's always these sorts of stories that come up. It's always got to do with money, and like they blow over. There'll be another one, I can guarantee you, within the next few years that'll blow over again. But like, I mean, from my perspective and just the way that the World Cup encapsulates the world, I think that's their centrepiece event. It is absolutely fantastic, having been there and being a part of it. It's probably the best sporting event I've ever been to, probably the best sporting event on the planet, you know, probably closely followed behind the Olympics. Look, these things will pop up all the time. Not everyone gets along. It's football. It's the world's game. It's almost like real life politics as opposed to just to sport. So, you know, a lot of Mickey Mousing around, but I'm sure this won't be the last time that something like this pops up.
Absolutely. And then, of course, Joseph Parker. Well, the suspension has been lifted. It was found out that he... So Joseph Parker can proudly walk with his head held high, not to be being accused or looked at as a recreational drug user. And frankly, knowing Joseph as I know him, he isn't that guy. He's far from it. He's a talented, talented human being and a bloody good, nice guy. So I'm really happy for him.
And I share that sentiment with you. I actually haven't had much to do with him in a work capacity, but just the way he comes across in the news and the way he speaks and from what I hear from my colleagues about him, you're bang on there. I mean, it's a real shame that he had to go through this because, he is, like you said, he isn't that guy. I just think when it comes back to the sport now, it's hard to see him getting to the heights of where his division's at the moment. You sort of feel like he's towards the end of his career, maybe fighting on undercards of promotions to clip the ticket to get a payday. I just, you know, to be brutally honest, I don't see him going back to the heights that he once was.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, we've already spoken about the Warriors, the All Blacks, this morning. Well, they won, and there were some good things come out of it. Peter Lacko was just outstanding, as was Cigna. I must admit, Fabian Holland, great to see him back. Yeah. Felt Billy Proctor probably had one of his better games in the All Black jerseys I've probably seen, but ill discipline, really ill discipline.
Yeah, I mean, like the first 5 minutes when you're watching it, the tempo and the pace and the skill set was fantastic. Takiahau goes over and scores and you think this could be a romping here. I mean, it was just execution. I mean, a lot of drop ball, just things didn't flow. They got absolutely monstered at scrum time, and especially in the set piece. And it wasn't until probably the last 15 to 20 minutes that they pulled finger and ran away with the game. I mean, look, I in some respects, I give them the benefit of the doubt. Being the first game of the tour, it's like the first game of the start of the season. You don't really know what to expect. You're playing a bunch of guys that you don't really play against often and probably less experienced. But nonetheless, it was a great game of football for 60 minutes. But I think it's one that Dave Rennie will be happy to win. Move on against, is it the Sharks next? Which I saw,
yes.
Ma'anonu on the bench for. Just before I came onto the air with you, I saw Ma'anonu has actually been named at 23 for the Sharks.
Well, I've I've just been speaking, I was just speaking to Brendan now from South Africa straight after the game. You know, all very well, a 44-year-old guy is still playing, but I believe it sends out the wrong signals to young South Africans, players that would have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
And I think it takes away also from the All Blacks
tour too in terms of the seriousness of the game. Like, I know these don't have any bearings on world rankings or anything, but it's still a tour game. It's still an important game for these guys to play and to roll out Ma'a Nonu, just as, a little bit of fun. It gives a little bit of a Barbarians feel to it. But, I agree with you, but, that's their choice. That's what they want to do. But I think, we'll see a very different team because it's only a few days' time at that game. I think one thing that was very clear, and I think we'll see throughout the next few weeks, is the physicality, and especially at scrum time. I mean, that was a provincial team that dominated the All Blacks scrum, and you could just imagine what the Springboks are going to. I did see a bit of a deficiency in the 6-2 split on the bench. Two halfbacks go down, and, all of a sudden one of those bench players has to cover... one of the outside backs has to cover half back, and that plan, or that sort of having more forwards on the bench than backs, didn't really pay off for the Stormers. And I think the way Josh Morby scored his try and the way the game opened up, I think it was a bit of fatigue from the backs there. So something the All Blacks may be able to exploit. You can't bank on injuries, but a couple of signs there that what the Stormers did in the game plan that they played with could almost replicate the same mentality the Springboks have in a couple of weeks.
Anyway, we get to the weekend ahead. We have a big weekend. We have football down at Eden Park. Auckland FC Women's Invitation 11 taking on Chelsea. We have some more NPC. We have boxing, David Nicra versus Floyd Madsen, and the NBL final between the Sharks and the Saints.
I'm from Wellington, you know that. I've seen the Saints lift many titles. I suspect that'll be the same this weekend too. Would love to see
them. You know, nobody likes them. No, sorry, Nick Mills, if you're listening, I'll still like you. But
no,
anyway.
No, mate. Yeah, people don't tend to like winners, and Wellington don't have a lot of winners usually, but we'll take the Saints. But like I mentioned before as well, I love that the footy's back at Western Springs Park. I've only been to one game at Eden Park NPC. It's terrible ground to watch NPC footy, if I'm being perfectly honest. It's just too far away. I like the club feel. Great for the Blues, great for the All Blacks, but NPC, they should let us stand around the field as opposed to sit in the stands. And yes, David Nika, big fight for him. I think, probably not similar to Joseph Parker, but needs to win. This guy needs to win his next three or four fights to show that he's serious about the weight division and about the sport. So, all go this evening. And a Shield Challenge tomorrow. So it's a very, very busy weekend, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing your time. You may see me at Western Springs today. I'm trying to converse former All Black AJ Whetton to let me into his corporate tent.
I'll tell you what, if you're at a loose end, I'm playing hockey at 1 p.m. at Avondale Hockey Turf in the P3 grade. So if you find yourself in the area or any of your listeners, feel free to come down. $5 beers, if you can't make
it. And by the way, the Giant Slayer is paying for that. Yes. Zion Dale, always great to have you back, mate. Have a fantastic weekend. Cheers.
You're a good man. Thank you, mate.
Cheers, bye. Okay, that was Zion Dale. Very entertaining, as he always is, and what a fantastic journalist he is, too. Anyway, next up, Seamus Martinez. We talk a bit of football.
On the edge of your night, staying drunk on your vine. The angels up in the clouds are jealous, knowing we found something so out of the ordinary. You got me kissing the ground, sanctuary. Try to be with your talk, or God, turn me to dust. The angels up in the clouds are jealous, knowing we found. Its faith, our colors will fade eventually. So if our time is running out, day after day, we'll make the mundane a masterpiece. Oh my love, I take one look at you, you're taking me out of the ordinary. I want you laying me down. Drunk and alive, the angels up.
welcome everyone back to the sports weekend. Just before we get to our next guest, looking to sell your property, looking to buy a property, looking to get on that Auckland property market, just looking for general advice. Well, you go to Barford and Thompson's in Epsom Branch and you meet Team Thompson. That's Robert Thompson and Deborah Thompson, husband and wife team, a great duo and great people as well too. They will help you sell your property to get the best result for you. They'll help you get into your, whether it's your first house or whether you're looking to size down or looking for an investment property. If you're looking for that advice, they're more than willing to help you. Robert's number is 021-737-949, r.thompson@barfords.co.nz, and Deborah's number is 021-673-600, d.thompson@barfords.co.nz. Well, we go to Seamus Martin. Good morning to you, young man.
Morning, Eamon. How are you going?
Yeah, good. Anyway, we might as well rip into it, young man. Auckland FC Women's Invitational 11 versus Chelsea. Obviously, some big news. Obviously, Abby Ursic is playing for Auckland FC. As we know, she's going to play a season with the Phoenix. But looking at this, this is going to be a great experience for some of these young women playing in this Invitational 11.
Yeah, I think the result is secondary to this afternoon's game, isn't it? I think the outcomes will be what the individual players from an Auckland FC perspective can get from it. We've seen Abby Ursig this week announce her signing for the Wellington Phoenix. I think that's wonderful for New Zealand football to have a player of her status returning home and offering to give back to those younger players coming through. But also for players like Charlotte Lancaster, who, you know, last season spent her time with the Newcastle Jets, is now unattached. This is almost a dress rehearsal for her, isn't it? A chance for her to put her name, or put her reputation out on the international stage and see if she can pick something up. Another, you know, young football fern, Maggie Jenkins, we've seen her sign with Perth Glory this week. So, yeah, I think it's an opportunity for these players just to put their best foot forward. I think the other thing that'll be interesting is the crowd attendance. I've heard up to 12,000 pre-sale, including complimentaries back at Eden Park, which, you know, hosted 9 games during the Women's World Cup. So, you know, great that we're seeing football and also women's football being put onto a big stage here in New Zealand. And I hope the fans really turn out for it, because it is a real powerhouse in terms of Chelsea coming down here. They're an 8-time Women's Super League champions. They're not the current champions, but it is a bit of a rebuilding phase for them. But there will be Chelsea football fans, regardless of the gender of the team, that will turn out and support their club, which I think is wonderful off the back of Tottenham playing against Auckland FC a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely, and let's hope for a decent crowd. I know that there was a bit of chatter on Facebook when the complimentaries went out, but at the end of the day, it is up to, you know, it's really up to the organisers, and they do want some sort of decent crowd there, because I think it's very important for women's football, Seamus.
Oh, look, absolutely, and it's a chance for you know, for the young players to be able to see and to be inspired by the players that they see in front. So you want to get as many young girls particularly to come down and watch the very best in the world and think that could be me too one day. You know, as well as general football fans. I think Auckland FC have done a good job in pushing the kickoff back a little bit later. The match is also being played on a Saturday, where traditionally women's football is played on a Sunday. So you still have the opportunity, from a club perspective, to play your weekly match on a Sunday and not have it interrupted. So, you know, smart things and good things looking at the wider football ecosystem from the event organisers. You know, we saw the same thing with the Tottenham game. It was played on a Sunday and not a Saturday, so that the men's football, community football, could be played as well. So I think, you know, traditionally New Zealanders do sometimes, you know, make their mind up on the day, looking at what the heavens will say. And I hope we have a decent walk-up to go with the ticket buyers and also the complimentaries that are going to come through the gates.
Absolutely, and I think it should be a fantastic day for women's football. Anyway, Andrew Pagnell will be stepping down in 2027. And obviously, you know, you can say what you like about him, but I will say this, the good stuff Woody was done, he was very proactive in us getting the 2023 co-hosting of the Women's World Cup, which to me was a huge victory for New Zealand football. And there are some things he's done good. He's been able to secure some good internationals. Obviously, we've been secured in the Karen Cup, where we're in Japan in October. But, you know, I suppose in many ways, New Zealand football, he's stepping down and New Zealand football's heading in a new direction. What do you think has been, you know Andrew Pagnell quite well, what do you think his legacy will be to the game here in New Zealand?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think the centrepiece is the 2023 Women's World Cup that was co-hosted here between New Zealand and Australia. You know, there's an $8.4 million legacy fund to come out of that. He inherited, you know, New Zealand football during a really difficult time. It was just after the Andreas Harraff situation. It was a period of having to rebuild trust, rebuild relationships, get organisational yeah. credibility back. So, you know, those early years were really a period of stabilisation for Andrew, and I think he did an excellent job. And then, you know, out of the back, don't forget he had to navigate the organisation through COVID as well. You know, it was a really difficult time. I think Qatar, not qualifying for Qatar in 2022, could be viewed as a missed opportunity, but he was the CEO that helped get the All Whites back to the World Cup stage after 16 years just recently as well. So, you know, I think, you know, for all the critics that are out there, it has been the longest period for a CEO of New Zealand football, if I'm not mistaken, particularly in the modern era, that's for certain. And I think he can look back on his tenure as CEO with a lot of pride. Yeah. The domestic game is in a really good standing at the moment. Yes, there's a lot of change going on, and change always elicits, you know, a positive and a negative response from the football community. But we've also got a bigger professional landscape than we ever had as well. The introduction of Auckland FC, the OFC Pro League, the early stages perhaps of a South Island representation in the A-League as well. So plenty of, you know, really strong completed projects and plenty of foundations built for projects to move forward. And with anything, I think it's a passing of the guard, you know, in charge since 2018. Probably professionally, he's looking for a new challenge himself. We might not have lost him to football altogether. There are more opportunities in football than when we, you know, than when he first skipped into the desk. So, I think stabilization and growth are probably the two things that I will reflect back on in terms of Andrew's leadership during his time at New Zealand football.
Absolutely. Well, we go. Well, next week it starts off the championship. And the reason we're going to talk about the championships, at the moment there are four New Zealanders. Libby Kadachi is at Wrexham. Max Crocombe's at Millwall. Actually, I'll say five. Elijah Just and Marco Staminish at Swansea. Luke Brooks-Smith is at Portsmouth. Now, the Portsmouth coach has already said this guy's not going out on loan. We won him part of our first team squad. Now, there's a possibility of Tyler Bindon heading back to Sheffield United, and a new rumour floating around, Finn Sermon possibly could be going to Derby County. So we could have up to seven, possibly eight, playing in the championship. Now, it may be the second tier of English football, but it's one of the top 10 leagues in the world. And I think this championship, it's going to be very, very interesting. Well, this, what we hope during this wee talk we don't upset the West Ham supporters.
Excuse me, Eamon. Yes. Well, I think West Ham supporters will be pretty happy this season. I think they'll bounce straight back up into the Premier yeah. League. The supporters have voted with their feet and their wallets, haven't they, in terms of season tickets. So I think you'll see that name at the top of the championship ladder for most of the season. That's a kiss of death, if ever I've given one to West Ham, isn't it?
Yeah, no, Speedy's already texting.
but as well, you know, I think Burnley and Wolves, the other two clubs that, you know, that dropped down the division from the Premier League, they'll also be the red-hot favourites to go back up. But look, in terms of that New Zealand perspective, you're right, you're spot on. I think it's a really good level for our All Whites players to be aspiring towards. It's probably the most competitive and the highest stakes league, I would suggest, in European football particularly, because, you know, the potential lollies that come out of qualifying for the Premier League are really significant. So, you know, you're having fixtures every Saturday, every Wednesday, every Saturday. It is a pretty grueling and demanding schedule. So,
yep.
you know, in terms of our players, and selfishly from a New Zealand football perspective, the more of our players we can play, we can have playing at that consistently high level week in, week out, the better off our national team is going to be. Max Croken for Millwall had a spell where he was the number one. He'll want to establish himself as the incumbent again for Millwall. And that match against West Ham is going to be a really interesting one for non-football fans out
well,
there.
Well, I was going to say really, there'll be more excitement off the field.
Exactly. That's a really heated rivalry between those two London clubs. So, you know, there's two games straight away that are going to be absolutely, you know, you're going to put a ring around them. But also, you know, Wrexham versus Swansea, the Welsh derby too, which will have Libby Kakachi, Marco Staminich and Eli Just participating in it as well. Portsmouth have got a really big derby with Southampton as well, the South Coast derby. So Luke Brooksmith will have some exposure in that too. So, and if the likes of Finn Sermon and Tyler Bindon can join them in that championship, well, that bodes really, really well. But it is an ultra hyper competitive league, and one that if New Zealand football fans get the chance to get their eyes on, I think they'll really be surprised by the quality, the competitiveness of that competition. And it's great for those top players to be involved in it week in, week out.
Yep, I absolutely agree. Well, these are my picks. I think West Ham, agree with you, West Ham, and I think Wolves will go up. The third place for the playoffs, and it's not because there's two New Zealanders playing in it, it's just that they are really buying well when it comes to championship football, as Swansea to get promoted via the playoffs.
Yeah, look, I'm going to throw Southampton in there. I know they start with a -4 points deduction after Spygate last year, but I think they were really, really good side last year. Had it not been for that points deduction, they probably would have found themselves back in the Premier League. So, look, I'm going to put Southampton in there as another possibility to qualify through either one of the direct placings for first or second, or through the playoffs, which is an ultra-competitive extension to that league already. But, I think Wrexham could be one that'll be knocking on the door too. They in their first season of the championship last year, they came very, very close. And I just wonder with the ambitious owners whether they can, keep maintaining that dream of getting that little club into the Premier League.
I don't want to sound cynical here, but I am going to be cynical, as you know. I think those wheels are going to fall off the Wrexham machine. I just don't see them. I can see them finishing mid to lower table. And I know everyone loves the TV series Welcome to Wrexham. It's a great fairy tale, but nah. I just cannot. I look at what some teams have brought, and I think they're behind the rest of them. But anyway, that's my thoughts. We move on to Northern League men's, and this is something that we're really good at picking, both of us. So we go to, these are the games of the weekend: Auckland United versus Tauranga City, Eastern Suburbs versus Fencibles, Birkenhead versus I think that's Manukau, or is it Bay Olympic? I'm not too sure. Western Springs versus Manukau, and of course Auckland FC reserves take on your mob Melbourne. So we go I'll go to that last one. Obviously a win or a draw to Melville.
I think you're looking at next week's fixtures there, Eamon. I think you're a week ahead of yourself, because I've got Auckland FC versus East Coast Bays today, 7th versus 5th.
Oh, my God, what an idiot. Do you know what? You're dead right. I'm going to read through this. Apologies, people. And I wrote this. So yep, it is Auckland United versus Tauranga. I was looking at the women's fixture. What an idiot I am. Eastern Suburbs versus Fencibles, Birkenhead versus Manukau, Western Springs versus Melville, and Auckland FC versus East Coast Bay. So we go to that. Auckland FC versus ECB. ECB need to win this.
They absolutely do, after falling at the hands of my Melville last weekend under lights over at Bay City Park. So yes, they are in fifth place, and to keep touch with that top four, they will need to defeat Auckland FC, which I'm picking Auckland FC to win that one. I think East Coast Bays just have got the wobbles at the wrong time. Western Springs versus Melville under lights at Seddon Fields. I'm going to pick my Melville team to go 2-2 on the road after winning at East Coast Bays. Birkenhead are the champions. That was confirmed last weekend by some margin too. And they're up against the bottom place team, the Monaco United. That will be no issue for the champions, Burko. They will win that one comfortably. Match of the round for me is third place Eastern Suburbs versus fourth place Defensible. Mm. That's at Medill's Farm. I think Eastern Suburbs win that one. But Fencies, I think I said last week, I think Fencies have got one eye on the cup after making it through to the semi-finals. So they're hanging in there in fourth place. But I think Eastern Suburbs will be too strong for them today. And then Auckland United versus Tauranga City. Well, Auckland have to win, like East Coast Bays have to win, to stay in touch for the top four. And I think they will do that at home against Tauranga, who have slipped to second bottom in the league. No match for Auckland City this weekend. They're over in Fiji at the OFC Champions League, where they will be taking on Solomon Islands champion Central Coast on Monday, Tiga Sport from New Caledonia on Thursday, and AS Venus of Tahiti on Sunday as they look to defend their OSC Champions League title.
Absolutely. Then we go to the Northern League Women's, Eastern Suburbs versus Fencibles, Melville versus Auckland United, FC Tauranga, Moana versus Western Springs. Well, I'm going to have to say this. I know you usually say a draw, but I'm going to be brutally honest with you. Your Melville taking on Auckland United, I'm going to have to back Auckland United on this one, Seamus, and I know you're going to go for a draw.
Well, no, I'm going to go with you, but even though Auckland United have got six players joining Auckland FC today for that Invitation 11, so their resources will be a little bit depleted, I still think they probably will have too much over our Melville side there. So I'm going to go with you and say Auckland United beat Melville United tomorrow down here in Hamilton. FC Tauranga Moana versus Western Springs is a really interesting match. Tauranga Moana have only 3 points this season. Melville and Springs on 9 points. Tauranga would need to win to have any chance of avoiding relegation, but I don't think they will. So I think Western Springs down in the bay tomorrow will take home the 3 points. And then Eastern Suburbs, who are currently first in the ladder against Fencibles, who are in third, I still think Eastern Suburbs will win that one and get one hand on the trophy, wrestling it away from Auckland United after a few years. There was one match played last night, which is West Coast Rangers versus Ellerslie. That finished a 2-2 draw out there at Fred Taylor Park in West Auckland.
Seamus, thank you so much for making yourself available. We won't have our usual chat because I know you have to get on the road, mate. So I will catch up with you next week. Have a good call, mate.
Thank you, appreciate it. And get down to Eden Park if you're thinking about it up in Auckland.
Okay, cheers. Thanks, mate. That was Seamus Martin, and I have to say, thank you, Seamus. What a complete idiot I am. I read out the week before this game. I'm going to get some stick from some people today. Anyway, we'll just get the little bit of music, then we'll get to our next interview.
'Cause you're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars. I'm gonna give you my heart, 'cause you're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars, 'cause you light up the path. I don't care.
Anyway, we might as well get to this interview with Casey Frank as we spoke the NBL final.
Well, good. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Sports Weekender on Planet FM. Well, we've come to the final of the New Zealand Basketball League's grand final, and it's, well, probably not the most fancy teams when you look at the table, but they came through, both have an impressive victories in their semi-finals. It's the Southland Sharks versus the Wellington Saints. Here to join us, he's considered pretty much Mr. Basketball in this country, but he was a foundation player for the New Zealand Breakers, a former Tall Black himself. Casey Frank, good morning.
Good morning, Amon. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to talk at this time of the year when the South NBL is coming down to the business end of the season.
And it has been a fantastic competition. So we get to this final, the Wellington Saints. And when you talk the NBL, Casey, the Saints, they have such a long legacy going back to the inception of the league. Now, when we look at this team, Elijah Pepa, the league's MVP, the Australian, he has been absolutely fantastic.
Dante Ingham. Liafa's been brilliant, but really coached well by Aaron Young.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, Jeff Taxes and the Wellington Saints in an NBL final, you can pretty much just about count on. They're aiming to get their 14th championship in a little over 40 years of existence, and they've played in about half of the finals. I'm not sure, I don't have the exact stats in front of me right now, but this is a team that expects excellence, that recruits to be a championship team time and time again, and certainly has the foundation to create things. You know, you mentioned Aaron Young has once again done a fantastic job coaching this team, getting to this point. This will be his, as a head coach, his fifth consecutive grand final. He made three of them with the Auckland Tuatara. Unfortunately for him and the Auckland squads, always came up short. But before getting his first championship with the Saints last year, and now looking for back-to-back, and he certainly has given this team the freedom they need to become a great squad. You know, you mentioned Elijah Pepper, who was just named MVP on Friday around midday. You know, that finally came out, but he's certainly deserved. He's been as explosive a scorer as we've had in this league in a long time. I think the last time we had a player average more than him was 2019, 2018, sort of in that range. So haven't had somebody of this caliber for a few seasons. Love the way he gets downhill. Certainly in the game, Hyrum Harris and Carlton Davidson are going to be extremely important. But this is a team that goes super deep. You know, just about six players and a couple of younger guys that are chipping in for limited minutes beyond those six. But this is a talented team that knows what it's doing and has been playing its best basketball down the stretch, having won a 9 of 10 games and five straight coming into the championship game, including a big win over the Southland Sharks to finish their regular season.
Absolutely. And, of course, then we look at the Sharks, like, you know, really when they went to Christchurch to play the Rams, everyone after basically the Saints absolutely towed the Tuatara, I thought to myself, here we go. It's a New Zealand tradition. It's going to be the Saints and the Rams in the finals. But the Sharks really were fantastic. Caleb Asprey's been a great import. But the guy I'm going to say has been the true inspiration behind it has been Sam Timmons. He does that work. His work on his rebounding stats are fantastic. And he is a true leader.
You know, I think he sets the defensive foundation for what the squad was. You know, he's been there for the entirety of the season. Their imports from Caleb Asbury and Keelan Boone arrived a little bit late, so it was about 3 or 4 games into the season before those guys really sort of got going. But Sam has been, I think, the stalwart and there the entire time. Led the equal lead in the league in rebounding in the regular season, led the league in blocks, and really lifted his offense from a season ago. You know, where he sacrificed a bit of that for the good of the team as they went to the finals, but he's become more of a focal point this season and playing with great efficiency. And certainly the main man in the middle. This is the team that, since Max Darling has been basically sidelined the entirety of the season, doesn't have a lot of strength up front. So they're really dependent on what Sam does on that interior. And he's certainly the driving force for this team. You know, named the most outstanding forward, New Zealand's most outstanding forward center, as well as getting an All-Star 5 nod at the Defensive Player of the Year, all indicative of how well-respected he was around the competition. You know, but when it comes to the offense, I do think it's probably the import trio that is most important. Caleb Asbury, what he does in transition, is really a key to what the Sharks want to do offensively. If they're not getting easy buckets, it can become a little bit of a grind for them in the half court. Keelan Boone, I think probably the cleanest offensive output they have in the half court because he's got great size at around 6'9" and can stretch that defense well beyond the 3-point line. You know, if you go 4 or 5 feet beyond it and hit big shots. So he really is that floor stretcher. And Rylan Jones has really been tremendous. You know, a bit of a diminutive point guard, not the biggest guy out there, but his game has been big. He's up there at the league in steals. He's been fantastic from deep, showing great efficiency. And for his size, which is only really around, you know, 5'5"-ish, 5'6", something in that range, you know, he's been a really good rebounder as well. So those are the main killers that the Sharks have, and they need them to perform. But Braden Inger is going to be really key. He shot the ball well so far this season, and Tobias Cameron off the bench. I think he really brings that defensive toughness and that mindset that I think the Sharks need a little bit of at times. He's going to be the one who's certainly going to have to stand up to the pressure that the Saints put on physically, which has been immense. But, you know, all season long, the Sharks team has been the most dominant squad. You know, they went 15 of 16 games during one point of the season, including a 10-game winning streak in there. You know, they came in to the final round of the year. A victory over the Saints would have given them the number one seed and home court advantage. They end up getting it anyway in the final through a more circuitous route. But they certainly are thinking a lot, I think, of last season's shortcomings when they came just short of the championship game, a chance to get it in front of their home final and what is expected to be the biggest crowd that the Southland Sharks have ever had. Certainly sets the stage for what's going to be a very exciting grand final.
Absolutely. And when we look at the standard of the league, you know, I feel like I say this to you all the time, but the standard gets better as the years progress with this New Zealand NBL. And also, when we look at some of the imports that come in, obviously, a lot of our Australian imports that have been part of the Australian NBL. Obviously, some of the American imports or some of the overseas imports, they see the New Zealand NBL, and they can probably see it as that stepping stone to higher leagues like the Australian NBL, or maybe going to Japan, or maybe going to Europe.
Yeah, I think you know, we are as an entertainment product of the basketball league, we're beholden to the talent, and fortunately, we have a really nice layer of local players who sets us up to be successful first and foremost. You know, we give them an outlet to play and ply their trade for you know, 4 months out of the year. But most of our key players, most of the big names in New Zealand basketball, are playing at other places and then coming back. But certainly the Kiwis are the first point of call for why the league has been successful. The import talent, you know, it can ebb and flow, but I think what we've been interested in this year is, you know, teams like the Sharks bringing two out of the three imports back. Those long-term relationships really do lead to greater success when you can bring a guy back multiple times. Of course, didn't need to do it for the Saints. They've got Elijah Pepper, one of the younger imports that we've had in the league in a couple of years, and he's just been absolutely dominant. I think there is a great synchronicity between our competition and the Australian NBL. You know, we work at different times, and we're able to give those players some of the key players in the area to play and ply their trade and lift the quality of the game, work on certain things during the season. Like Elijah Pepper, you know, he really worked on his mid-range this season to try to go back to the Australian League and lift his reputation as a scorer, you know, trying to further his career. And, you know, as much as I love the league, or anybody in New Zealand does love this league, it's not the pinnacle of basketball. It's the pinnacle of professional basketball in New Zealand that you can see everywhere. But, you know, it is a stepping stone, you know, so it is a place where we've got a reputation for, you know, creating good players for guys who succeed in this league tend to succeed at higher levels, and that's something that we've been able to use to convince high quality players to continue to come down here for, you know, the last 40 years or so, and hopefully the next 40 or so. But it is always an interesting situation that, you know, if the best players that we do have, when they play that well, there's a pretty good chance that they won't be coming back, because the money that you can be offered in other parts of the world right now is just staggering. You know, certainly the Australian NBL has got a salary cap over $2 million now. These guys in Japan are making money that's, you know, comparative to lower levels of the NBA. So yeah, these are the areas where guys want to play and want to, you know, certainly get remunerated for their efforts. And we're certainly happy to have the players of that quality as long as we get them, because it does so much for basketball in this country, does so much for the fans, and most importantly, I think, does so much for that next generation of Kiwi hooper, you know, the 16, 17, 18, 21-year-old guys that are training with these players every day, learning what it means to become a professional, sharpening that steel against steel, and continuing to evolve our competition and our players as we move into the future.
Absolutely. I have to say, Casey, that was well said, and I have to say there will be a big crowd in Invercargill on Sunday, and I think that while my head says the Saints, but my heart says the Sharks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You heard Coach Yim speaking this weekend that he came back this season for three goals. He wanted to get a championship for Southland. He wanted to bring respect to Invercargill. He thinks that Invercargill doesn't have the reputation it should across New Zealand as a place he feels pretty strongly about. And third was he wanted to sell out. You know, it's news to me because I remember playing in there with some pretty big crowds, but apparently the Sharks have never actually completely sold out a home game. And the word is that we're very close to a sellout right now. So if you are in the deep south and hoping to get a game, get in quickly because those tickets are going fast, not many left, and it's going to be a fantastic environment. I think I'm really interested to see how this one works out. You know, the Sharks have really worked to bring their program back up to the heights that it was a few seasons ago. They've gone through a little bit of a tough patch, but they've turned it around so quickly in the last couple of seasons. It would be a fantastic story. Jill Bolger, who's retiring after being with that club from infancy, every single step of the way that she's been with the Southland Sharks, and this is going to be her last game as general manager helping to run that club, so a little extra motivation for them after they put her name up in the rafters next to Paul Hanade, Kevin Braswell, and Alex Pleasure. You know, it's the only ones up there along with Jill Bolger, so they certainly have a little bit something to play for, and I think most of the rest of the basketball community in New Zealand wouldn't mind seeing the Saints not get another championship, not hang up banner number 14. Let's spread it out a little bit as the Sharks go for their third title. But when it comes down to it on the court, these are two very evenly matched teams. They do their work in different ways. I don't know who's going to be the winner. I do feel like it's going to be a great competition and certainly a great display of basketball here in New Zealand.
Well, I have to say thank you, Casey. You've really summed it up well. Obviously, you mentioning about the Saints, I hope you're not listening at Mills, but I have to say thanks so much for your time, Casey. Great stuff. Cheers.
I appreciate it, Edmund. Don't worry, Nick knows everybody hates the Saints. He's used to it.
Cheers, bye.
Well, Nick Mills and Jordan, my good mate Jordan, I hope you have a good game, but I really hope Southland wins. Sorry about that. Have to be biased towards the South Island. Next up, we have, they're back, the panel, Mark Watson and Sean Summerfield. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender, and if you're looking for a nice place to go for a pint, you live locally, go to your local in Mount Eden. It's the Horse and Trap. They're based at Free Enfield Street in Mount Eden, not far from the new Mangawhai's CRL train station, and I can tell you something, they've got a good selection of beer and wine. They have some really great food. They have daily specials, and I can tell you something, downstairs they have a fantastic function room, which you can hire for your events, 21st, weddings, or whatever, or that special birthday. So give the Horse and Trap a call. Their number is 09630 3055, or you can email them info@horseandtrap.co.nz. So we go to the panel on line one, the man, the legend, Mark Watson. Good morning to you, Watto.
Yeah, morning to you, Amon. Morning to your listeners.
Morning. And the silver tongue, silver fox, Sean Summerfield. How are you?
Good, mate. G'day, mate. G'day, team.
Yep. How are you all? Well, we're going to start it off. We'll start it off with you, Watto. First of all, the All Blacks 38, Western Stormers 21. I got up to watch that game. I will say there were some good things that came out of that performance. Peter Lacko was just outstanding. Fabian Holland, good to see him back. But ill discipline, absolute ill discipline. And that will cost us in the test matches. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, a very typical sort of, you know, it's been a while, haven't we, since we've sort of been on a tour with internal games, but very sort of typical of what you do expect from the midweekers. First up, scrappy side. I thought the scoreline probably flattered us a little bit in the finish. Discipline, I don't know about. I don't know. Look, there's discipline to a degree, but I always just feel with English referees that they just always have to make it about themselves at times. And what we was 25 penalties in the space of, what, 80 minutes? That's one almost every 3 minutes. We've got the TMOs getting involved again. And I just hope it's not going to be just the story of this entire tour where we just constantly, constantly tries being scored. And then whether it be South Africa scoring tries, us scoring tries, and then suddenly the TMOs involved, we're going back, we're looking at something, and we're looking upstairs, we're looking at in slow motion and replay. Just does my head. And in fact, you know, you compare what you saw this morning with the NRL last night with the Warriors and Penrith, and you can understand why rugby league is absolutely thriving at the moment and rugby starting to struggle. They certainly have to address it. Look, from an All Black point of view, yes, some good things in there. Oh, to be fair, I actually thought Rico Ioane actually played all right.
Yeah, I'd have to say that, yeah. I thought he was.
I haven't been a big fan of his. I wasn't convinced he should go on this tour. Look, I think Beauden Barrett's done. I think his time's up in the number 10 jersey. I don't think he did too much. Look, you know, these guys getting pinged, Cecilio Tosi getting pinged every time there was a scrum. I mean, I think a different referee would probably interpret that slightly differently again. So, look, I just want my All Black team to win. I want them to win those midweek games. I probably didn't expect much more than what we saw. Good first up win.
Sean, your thoughts on that game?
Look, I only watched highlights, guys, because I was still recovering from the best Warriors game I've ever seen in the Fleece last night. But, from what I saw, we had the second best scrum all night, pretty average in lineouts, although Fabian did pinch an important one, obviously. But, 47% of the territories of the Stormers? Pretty scratchy, but, you know, and normally you'd say an All Black was man of the match, but Dean Faree, 39 years old, that I think is the standout. I'm going to say him, 3 tackles in 5 seconds in one sequence. I thought that was just awesome. But, mate, I don't know, when I saw the Stormers at 17-1 odds, I thought, man, I tell you what, this whole greatest rivalry thing, it's almost like trademarked or whatever they're doing with it. It's actually doing my head in. This race to name all these tours and stuff, I'm getting quite grumpy with it. You know, everyone wants to follow on from the Invincibles and Incomparables and all that. And what do we have in 07? The Inexcusables? I don't know. But, yeah, just, man, stop running it. I'm still trying to work out whereabouts. Is Baltimore in the northwest of South Africa? I'm just trying to work out where it is. Sorry.
Very good, Sean. That is excellent. Yeah, just when you look at this, like, obviously, I'm excited about the tour. I'm going to be quite honest with you. It brings back a few old memories. It's like getting up, watching matches, like we used to see in the Northern Hemisphere midweek matches. But the big thing is, it's that I still think this tour, it's not a sprint. And it is going to be a marathon, and it's going to be a marathon of attrition. Putting the match in Baltimore still, well, it's all about the one thing. It's all about the cash, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, look, I mean, I look at the series. I'm only interested in the 3 tests in South Africa. Yeah. I mean, if we win those 2-1, I'd be delighted. And if we were to somehow end up losing the one in Baltimore, and you could argue that it was a 2-2 series, I don't buy into that. I think the one in Baltimore is just an add-on cash grab for both countries, and it's just an exhibition, to be honest. I just want to win the series in South Africa, which is a 3-test series, not a 4-test series, in my opinion. Yeah, look, it's just one area, and I didn't mention at the start, one area we're still just terrible, aren't we? Is under the bloody highball, mate. I just cannot understand how we are so bad still under the highball. You know, I read things about, oh, they bought in these special glasses that change the light or something, and then they've got out the, they bring out those, what do they call it, those swimming noodles that kids use and sort of flap that in the air and try and distract players when they're practicing. You know, just practice more. Don't play golf this week. Just practice being under the highball. That's all it is. But seriously, just don't. Just go and practice under the highball. That's all it is. It's like it's a work on, guys. It's just something you do in your own time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All I'll say, winning ugly in Cape Town in week one, you can forgive that, but I tell you what, learning nothing from this, that's not forgivable.
Absolutely, Sean, absolutely. So we move on. Last night, I'm going to say this right now, we spoke off here. I believe, and this is probably the best performance in the era of Andrew Webster as a coach, I believe this could be defining for the Warriors. I did not give them a chance against the Panthers, but even though the Panthers had a few out, they're still the Panthers. To me, I felt that, you know, people are already getting waxy lyrical, which I've had to tell off my rugby league commentator saying, could it be a year? And I said, please don't do that. But it was just good. It was just looked good. It felt good. You were glued to the TV. And that's what Mark has said. After watching 52 minutes of a first half and watching 40 minutes of a Warriors game, I know what I like to watch is the 40 minutes. Sean, you were there last night. Wasn't it brilliant?
Oh, mate, it was, and everything about it was great. The first sets, the absolute violence of the hits, and I said to my daughter, I said, Alex, this is a grand final. The way this was just awesome. It was everything that was great. The way they played, they didn't really fade until late in the game. Oh, look, I will be a little bit of a cynic and say the Warriors have thrilled in August before and faded in September. So let's just, you know, keep it all in perspective. But, you know, whoever was out, whatever, and obviously, you know, his injury, you know, that could be terminal for Penrith as well. But I just thought that was just amazing. Just there's so much about it. And I lost my sort of ability to analyse the game. I just got caught up in just the awesomeness of the contest, the way the Warriors just kept going. They didn't fade. Their defence was phenomenal. And hey, and they were bloody good under the high ball too, boys.
They were really good. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I actually think this team is legitimately the real deal. I think they can go the whole way. I don't think they've played badly all year, even in their losses. You know, we haven't really had the blood. I thought maybe the worst game we played was probably against the Dogs a few weeks ago. Even then, that wasn't a major blow. I think it was 18-6 or something in the finish, wasn't it? And that was probably the worst game. You know, we've shown that we can win on the road. I think we've just got size. We've got speed. This is the best chance I think we've got to win it. I think if we were to get through to the grand final, I think we would be a hard side to beat. Where I think previously, when was it? And I think it was 2011, was it 2003 or 2004? We made a grand final 2-0-2.
Yeah.
You know, you felt we got there, but you probably felt we weren't quite good enough to win it. I keep saying it's just great for Warriors fans. It's great for blue collar work. It's just great for South Auckland. We're a rugby league city when it comes to spending money on the overball. You know, it's not rugby, it's a league city. And again, last night, just the way they played, the way they got up, the way they just absolutely punished Penrith. Penrith had no answers, man. It was just, they were just on the back foot all night. We've just got some X-factor players. We've got this one team, one dream approach that's very much run through that entire club. Metcalf slotting straight back in. And, you know, he probably created the problems himself at that club. But, you know, it's like he got his opportunity, took it. You sensed he was very much, you know, part of that team last night, that he was as... He had as much buy-in to this team being successful this year, no matter what's happening next year, as any other player. And so yeah, I think we should be excited about the Warriors. We're going to be a hell of a side. We're going to be a hard side to beat come playoff time.
I think so too, and I think the big thing here, Sean, is that Luke Metcalf coming back. Now, this is gonna cause a big, big problem for Andrew Webster. It's a good problem to have. It's a bloody good problem to have. But I think what we saw is what we've seen in the past few seasons out of Luke Metcalf.
Yeah, look, I mean, I honestly, and yeah, we're so focused on Metcalf. One thing that's just, when I said about the one team, one dream thing, I just realised something. In the past, when the Warriors have got there, we've had those sort of star players we hung everything on, a Stacey Jones or a Sean Johnson or something like that. And there are some stars in this Warriors side, but when you watch them, it feels like you're watching this entire team. You're up against the Warriors. You're not depending on just one person. It's not Dallin or whatever. And you've got these tough older guys. You've got these young guys like Hecker coming through. I think there's just a completeness to what you're seeing. And, hey, I love the fact if Webby's got a challenge on who he plays, I mean, isn't that a great situation to be in and the desperation we've had in the past?
Absolutely, because when we've lost a key player, we've suffered. And I was beginning to feel that before during the season when we lost a couple of key players, but somehow this Warriors side, and it's still a long way to go, but I've just got this feeling. We're in playoffs football. Webster's got us there 3 years out of four. He is a good coach, and I just think there's a good, really good culture, and I think some of our rugby union people could learn a lot from the culture they bring into the Warriors.
Hey, Mark, you said Auckland's a league town. We used to be a rugby town here. I think they've handed it to the Warriors, and Warriors have run with it and got bigger and bigger and bigger, and they've taken over the entire city. And I tell you what, though, didn't they play well in red and black?
What they do is they understand the fan. Rugby's never understood the fan. Rugby, it's all about the players. It's all about how hard it is. It's all about the players' association and this sort of me, and trying to sort of sustain 28 professional teams in New Zealand, and just diluting everything and just treating and making it too top heavy and making it all about the All Blacks and the rest of it. And rugby league, it's the people's game. But it's not just that. I mean, it's the opposition that turn up every week, how many. So you've got a Warriors, but you had Nathan Cleary on display last night, arguably one of the greatest of all time playing. I mean, just to go and watch him say, I saw Nathan Cleary play. I mean, that's it. There's brand athletes on every team, aren't they? And they do a very good job at building these stars like the NBA does. And like I say, it's, they just do everything right. They tick the boxes. The Warriors are winning, which is great. Not necessarily winning everything, but they're winning. They're building something special. And I think when people, it's not just a love for the Warriors. I think it's just a love for rugby league and a love for the NRL. And, rugby have only got themselves to blame for it. And again, you just look at the refereeing and the stuff that we saw this morning in that All Black game versus what we see last night. And you can understand why people are just watching league A. It's just not the frustration that you get when you sit down and watch a game of rugby.
Absolutely. Well, we move on to the Commonwealth Games finished at the beginning of this week. That's just gone. And I have to say there were some highlights for me. Zoe Hobbs was fantastic. That really got me interested. Elijah McCartney in the pole vault was fantastic. But it goes to India in 2030. But after that, Mark, I don't know what the future of the Commonwealth Games is. I believe having it down to reduced scale is great, but after 2030, which is the centenary of the Commonwealth Games, where does this go? Is there a future? Does New Zealand put their hand up to host it as a nation in 2034? Because I just feel that the interest isn't there, and really the only interest we really got in New Zealand was when Zoe Hobbs won that 100 metres.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't go spending $1 billion on trying to get it here, not with maybe where that money could be better spent. Certainly wouldn't be asking the government to do it when you've got, people having to pay for cancer treatment drugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
You look at the state of a whole lot of sort of more important things. And, you can say, oh, it generates this much money. Well, it only generates that much money if you're getting foreign visitors, if you're getting new money to come into New Zealand. And I'm just not sure that you will necessarily get it. You might get an influx of Australians coming over to watch, but they're probably Australians that would have come at some other point anyway. So there's a whole lot of things where you can sort of, debunk a lot of the, propaganda that can often go from those promoting the event around the economic side of it. Look, I think some events clearly carry more weight than others. I'm not a big fan of like 3-on-3 basketball and that sort of stuff. It's great for lawn bowls. It's great for sort of the shop window for netball, but Yeah, I mean, Zoe Hobbs' performances were remarkable because it is a time that would have got a fourth at the Olympics. I think Lewis Clearbert still showed his quality and class as a swimmer. You know, there are some genuine world-class events, but a lot of it, you could argue, there's not a high level of elite competition if you look at, say, some of the winning margins or the winning times in certain events and then maybe compare them on a truly global stage. But look, it is what it is. It's a good preparation for athletes who are looking to go to the Olympics in terms of dealing with some of the peripheral things that they'll get at the Olympic Games with, you know, opening ceremony, sort of games, villages, multi-sport events, you know, so many, you know, different athletes from different sports, media interest and stuff. But yeah, look, I'll be honest, man, and this is hard coming from me because I love 1974 and all of that, but I probably wouldn't miss it if we didn't have it.
That's a tough one. Sean, your thoughts?
Yeah, 74 was peak Commonwealth Games, like the Empire and the Commonwealth. It's just fading away. I don't know, should there be some sort of youth games or something? Do they just make athletics? But I think the Commonwealth thing, sadly, it's done. We've got to accept there's some sports like netball and bowls that aren't big global sports. I watched some of the side. I do love the track cycling at the games. I remember Brisbane was the first one I watched closely in 82.
Yeah.
But I was watching the 4,000-metre pursuit, and I thought, oh, my gosh, there was a Ghanaian rider who went there for a brief moment, was the Commonwealth Games record holder, and I looked at her average speed, and I actually rode a faster 60k ride in the coast to coast years ago, and I was slow. And I thought, oh no, guys, it's all nice. What are we doing? You know, like, decide what you are. You can cheapen the games, and it's good to involve, but come on, she looked like she was riding a Relay 20. It's not fair on her, not fair on the sport. Zoe Hobbs, amazing, and that's why maybe do we have some sort of Commonwealth Games athletics meet? I looked at the numbers. Like, this was done cheaply, and it was still $400 million to do cheaply for 10 sports. There were empty seats there. It's just not... I think, guys, we've got to just be realistic here and, you know, spend money where it should be spent, and you can have marquee events for these sports that don't need to be the Com Games, especially if you cheapen the games. And as I said, 74, what was that, the greatest middle distance race ever, wasn't it, Mark?
Yeah. Oh, Dick Taylor, 10,000 metres was great.
Brilliant.
And obviously Philbert Bay in the 1500, running from the front, breaking the established then world record. John Walker went under it. I love Rob Dixon's quote. He goes, I run the, what is it, the... I think he said he ran the fifth fastest time in history and finished fourth.
Oh, mate, well, I looked at that. At that time, third, fourth and fifth ran the fourth, fifth and seventh fastest 1,500 times in history at the time. Yeah. Amazing.
And
look, I think 78 was okay. There was aspects of 82. I mean, 1990, you still had a good thing, but we just can't afford it. We'd have to build a completely new track and field stadium. I mean, it's a 10-day event. The marathon, you know, gone are the days where you've got the Deacon Stellas and, you know, right back in the day, no one even wants to run the marathon anymore at the Commonwealth Games because, you know, everyone's targeting the big money events around the world. And, you know, part of the reason why I think Hamish Kerr and Geordie Beamish weren't interested is because the World Track and Field Champs are in September and they're just peaking for that. They're not peaking for the Commonwealth Games. They're in a base phase. They're in periodization. And you can pretend all you want, but, you know, that's just the harsh reality of it now. Look, and they have been great in the past, but, yeah, it's time to move on.
And they talk about the legacy, and hey, if we needed, if this was the motivation, if the Queen wanted or King wanted to put in and help build us a new stadium downtown for it, that would be amazing. But the fact is that, you know, aside, if you don't need the sporting venue, the legacy is no good. The housing and everything else that go in there, there is no gain for that now. It's done.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean, just quickly, Liam Lawson, we're hearing rumours, first of all, that he's going to lose his seats. Then I see another rumour up on the internet that he could be replacing Max Verstappen if Verstappen doesn't want to stay at Red Bulls. This is, what the hell is going on? I am so bloody confused.
Okay, so the Red Bull CEO, Peter Beyer, has dismissed replacement. It's just rumours, saying both the drivers are doing a brilliant job. That's the Racing Bulls boss, sorry. Lawson has said he's got no idea. Now, the thing is, though, the whole board, this whole sort of chessboard, only moves once Max Verstappen decides what he's doing. If he stays at Red Bull, nothing might happen. He could retire. Does he go to McLaren and Mercedes? Who knows? There could be some shuffles after that. But right now you can't deny Liam has 43 points to Lindblad's 23. He's season best sixth. He's five straight races in the points. He's done exactly everything he's been asked to by team principal Alan Permain. He's done everything he can do there. But just look back at it. He's been demoted, recalled, he's been doubted, and all the time he's been sort of quietly excellent. And the problem's never been his driving. It's that he keeps being the answer to a question nobody else, or somebody else gets to ask. You know, that's the whole thing. People are just talking a whole lot of crap. He's done everything he needs to do as far as results. He's the best of the non-top teams, if you look at his results. But there's a whole lot out of his control. The kid's doing as good as we can ask for him.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, I have to say this. Always great having a chat. I know we couldn't have a chat, much of a chat, the other day, because I know you're busy, but good luck for your show tomorrow, the Rugby Run on Sports Nations. It's a bloody good listen too, with a fantastic host. Sean, always great having a chat. Always enjoy our wee chats and our texts. Guys, both of you, I want to thank you for making yourself available. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Sean. See you.
Cheers. And that's us done.